Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Bulletin.
Ben Strang is on the Bulletin this morning, which is absolutely fantastic. One of the go-getters, one of the Brat Pack of New Zealand sporting media is Ben. And Ben will be very excited, no doubt, that the Warriors have signed James Fisher-Harris for four long, great years. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, wonderful news for the Warriors. And it's just a continuation, I guess, of this last year and a half where, isn't it wonderful when a signing has just sprung upon you, where stuff just happens and there's no rumor mill, there's no smoke and fire, it just happens. And I think that's a real reflection of where the Warriors are as a club now, is that they're all on the same page, they're all heading towards the same target, and now they're making these massive moves. And I think that's why players like James Fisher-Harris want to come to New Zealand and play for the Warriors, is because, you know, yes, the results have been really good. They look like a team that can win a premiership in the next few years, which is obviously a huge draw. But when a organization has been run well and it seems to be a safe place and there's no drama, that's a very safe place to go and a place that people desire to be. And I just think that's wonderful.
Which is very interesting, because were we saying the same things 2 years ago? I mean, last year there was the turnaround season, obviously, but 2 years ago, man, they were in the news the whole time. Cameron George, Mark Robinson, the owner, you know, the coaching setup. I mean, it was just completely, they had a target on their foreheads. But now, just out of the news, it's incredible. And then they just come up with a gem like this.
Absolutely. And yeah, you're right. A few years ago, it seemed like a bit of a calamitous situation, but you know, so there are times where it takes a little while to sort of bed in and get the culture and the vibe around a club or a team that you want. Obviously, bringing in Andrew Webster as the coach was a catalyst as well, because he obviously runs the team in a particular way. He has expectations for the players and the staff at the club, which I think definitely helps to set the tone. But now if you go through and you think about, you know, the signing of James Harris, the replacement of Adam Fanua Blake, I mean, if anything, it's an upgrade, right? I mean, James Fisher-Harris, one of the best players in the world, is just, I don't know anyone who could have expected a signing like this. This is amazing. But if you think about the draw card for James Fisher-Harris, like I say, you've got a good or you know, probably a great head coach. You've got a club that clearly has good senior leadership with Cam George running a tight ship as well. You've got huge crowds coming in, a massive supporter base. So it's a place that you would desire to play in front of such fantastic fans. And as a New Zealander, imagine being the one who helps bring a first NRL title to the Warriors. I don't see a bigger draw card than that if you're a New Zealander, than to come back to see the direction of travel for the Warriors and think, hey, maybe I can be part of that team that wins the first NRL title in Auckland.
What about the leadership? I mean, let's hope Tohu Harris has got a season or two left in those beaten up old legs. But to be fair, what about you put James Fisher-Harris, Kiwi captain, alongside Tohu Harris? I mean, who ain't gonna be ripping the hooks off in the dressing room for that too?
No, exactly. And that's the other part of it, is that the Warriors have done a pretty good job in recent years as well of bringing in some of the younger talent, the players who are playing in the lower levels, then they get their chance and they, you know, seamlessly fit into to this NRL side. And when you've got players like James Fisher-Harris, you know, like this leadership team that the Warriors have now, it makes it so much better for that. The one thing I do find interesting, having read a bunch of stories about this move, particularly out of Australia, and maybe you guys are chuckling at it as well, but, you know, you've got Freddie Fittler and Andrew Johns saying you've got to respect Penrith for letting them go. Nothing about the Warriors and the move that they've made, but you've just got to respect Penrith for being willing to let them go. What a great team Penrith are. And then you've got other stories, you know, questioning whether the Warriors have breached rules in order to get him across and are breaching NRL contract regulations. There's no joy and happiness for the Warriors coming from across the Tasman, which I think shows how good a move this is for the Warriors. I think in time, maybe some of the Australian scribes and league lovers over there will start to realize that the Warriors are running a really good ship over here. But when you get those reactions, I think it actually probably proves that this is a hell of a move.
As opposed to across down in Wellington, or actually in Auckland too, because they've got head offices in Auckland as well, New Zealand Rugby. We talked yesterday to Pete Winchester, who's the spokesperson, or one of the spokespeople for the provincial unions on this governance of New Zealand Rugby. And it appeared after the conversation, really, that they're not even close at this point just to trying to work out who's going to be on the board, what kind of person they want on the board, the makeup of the board and the job of the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's a. I think this is a fascinating space. Just, I mean, obviously, this whole review process and the arguments between the provincial unions, the Players Association, and NZ Rugby themselves. I mean, none of them seem to be able to get on the same page, which is really interesting. But I think there's a wider question, which I guess this all hints to, is about the structure of professional sport in New Zealand, not just in rugby, but it would flow over to cricket and other sports as well, of this, you know, top-down funding approach and how it works. You know, you talk to a lot of players' reps, you talk to a lot of even heads of some of the major associations or the rugby unions, and some of them just don't think it works anymore. With the way that things are going overseas and the way that things are funded, there's lots of private ownership and all that sort of stuff. Does a top-down funding model actually work when there's so many stakeholders, everybody's looking after them, trying to look after themselves? I'm not sure that it does. And perhaps, you know, at some point there's going to have to be some radical thinking about where professional sport goes in New Zealand. And I don't know if the way that we do things now is going to work. I think there's going to probably be a time when there's a bunch of overseas investment coming in to help prop up some of our professional sports. And you know, there'll be a lot more private ownership, I would imagine. Obviously, Super Rugby has sort of touched on some of that. But I just think that's the way that it's going to go. And so NZ Rugby, provincial unions, NZ Cricket, everyone has to get a better understanding of where this is all going and how they can be in the right place when it does. Because at the moment, with the rugby situation, it just looks all a bit farcical, and people need to understand what the direction of travel is.
It's just, to me, it just seems so far from absolutely being resolved, and it's such a big thing, because once you hand up any sort of say, the unions have had it since the day dot, they're not going to get it back. So I can see why they're so reluctant to just hand it over on not their terms. So we'll just keep an eye on that one, but I don't think it'll be a quick eye. But talk about being proactive and signing and letting people go, etc. How about the Phoenix again? They've nabbed the spotlight with this young Gabriel Sloan Rodriguez coming to the club. Well, he's always there, but coming to the club permanently for 3 years at the age of 16, Ben, and then Macy Fraser at the age of 21 heading to the big lights of the National Women's Football League in America.
Yeah, apologies if you just heard the dog in the background there. He's named after Mo Salah, so as soon as he heard football chat, he wanted to get involved. This is pretty remarkable couple of days for the Phoenix, because particularly the Macy Fraser you know, selling her to the National Women's Soccer League, that is, I just think that's a remarkable move. And I think this is a major moment in the Wellington Phoenix women's team's history to sell a player for that amount of money. It shows that this is a pathway that there is a pathway for young footballers in New Zealand. And that is, it's pretty amazing. I think it's wonderful for women's football here. And it sort of, you know, the only reason there is a Wellington Phoenix women's team is because there was some government investment a couple of years ago. And so the fact that it's now paying off for some of these players is amazing. But yeah, this young kid as well who signed, Gabriel Sloan Rodriguez. I mean, imagine being 16 and signing your first professional contract. That's amazing. It'll be another one where they hope that over the next 3 years, he develops into a real star in the A-League, and then they can sell him to Europe. But the way the Phoenix are going, the way that they are developing young players and trying to make some money out of moving them on to better places you can't think of a better way to run this club to keep them making money and keep them competing, because it's good for the football on the field, but it's also great for these young New Zealand footballers who see a pathway to going to Europe.
Ben, obviously, your dog Mo is celebrating the fact that both Arsenal and Man City have been biffed out of the Champions League this morning.
Yes. I think he is. Yeah, young Mo. When he's naughty, I call him Muhammad, because obviously, but he's very happy. Well, I am happy, but I'm also not. It's great to see them suffer, but at the same time, it means they can probably focus a bit more on the league, which is where Liverpool's obviously got all their eggs in that basket. So I was thrilled after the shock loss to Crystal Palace that Arsenal then went and got beaten by Aston Villa, but now I'm just so worried about Man City. It seems like Man City time, doesn't it? Comes to the end of the season and they'll go on a 11-game winning streak or something to claim the title. So hopefully that isn't the case and me and Mo will be celebrating come May.
God, there's some surprising amount of Liverpool fans that work in the media. Hey, here's an interesting one. And I was reading an article that thinking about how teams are going to cope with the heat and the afternoon heat in Lautoka when they take on the Fijian Drua. And that was about having ice packs behind the goal line and all sorts of measures to try and more drinks breaks to try and make sure that players get through and it's not a danger or a health risk as such. Well, the Hurricanes play the Drua, but according to me, it's a 7:05 game in Suva, which should theoretically be a little bit more pleasant, shall we say?
Yeah. I mean, the Hurricanes, at the moment, I think it is one of those situations where you've got to figure out if there's any outside influences that could possibly stunt their form to be unbeaten, to be playing the way they are, to have cut through the Chiefs in the way that they did at the weekend. They look absolutely fantastic at the moment, even if they've lost their star halfback and for the season and that sort of stuff. It'll be humid. The ball will probably be slippery. The Drua are no bums, that's for sure. They're a good side. But I would expect that the Hurricanes will be able to handle that. At this point, it seems hard to see how they might lose the Hurricanes. They're playing terrific rugby. You know, when they inevitably rest some players due to NZ rugby policies, then sure, there might be a chance for some other team. But they look tremendous at the moment. It's very exciting to watch.
And that's an interesting point in itself. So, who of the Hurricanes, who we might get a clue here if they're in All Black contention, because they will be ordered to stand down. I mean, we're talking maybe a Flanders, maybe a URC, someone else, a Ruben Love or someone along those sorts of lines. Who do you think are genuine, out of the success of the Hurricanes, who are certainly putting their names on a piece of paper, even in pencil, from Scott Robertson at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about somebody like Ruben Love. I think there's questions around around those halves for the, for first five for halfback for the All Blacks. I mean, halfback sort of taken out of contention there. But the likes of Ruben Love, I think, is a good shout of somebody who may get an opportunity. It will be fascinating to see, because I've got absolutely no steer on where they might be hitting with the team. But there's clearly a moment of transition for the All Blacks. I am very excited to see what Scott Robertson does in his first few games in charge, and how things change, how their plans change as an All Blacks team, and if the where he goes, I guess. I suspect whenever you have a Canterbury coach in charge of a national team, you expect there to be some Canterbury bias. I feel like that goes back many, many years. But I do suspect that somebody like Scott Robertson won't have that bias, and he will be looking under every nook and cranny to try to find and unearth talent. And so I think that everybody's got an opportunity. If you play well in the next month or so, you've got every chance of maybe getting a crack at the All Blacks. So it will be very fascinating to see who does step up, who maintains their form, and who does get a look in when Scott Robertson names that first squad.
Ben Strang has been our guest on the Bulletin this morning. Thanks very much, Ben, for that across the board, and from the backup from Mo as well, or Mohammed, as he might well be the case at the moment. Cheers, man. Thank you, and we'll catch up again soon. Cheers, Ben.
No worries. Appreciate it. I'll go tell Mohammed off.